Raising consciousness and awakening mankind. This is End of Days Radio. From the broken ruins of Babylon. That's right. This is End of Days Radio. And I am your host, Daniel, broadcasting to you all the way from the shimmering Emerald City up here in the heart of the Pacific Northwest. Hello, everybody. How are you doing? I'm so excited to be here on this June 22nd of 2017. Our guest today is Eve Lorgan. She is a lifelong UFO and abduction researcher. She wrote two books. The first one is called The Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships. And the second one is called The Dark Side of Cupid, Love Affairs, the Supernatural, and Energy Vampirism. Hello.
Hey there. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing good, Eve. How are you doing today?
I'm okay. I just put myself on online with a green check mark, but I always turn it invisible. Otherwise, people keep trying to call me, so I wasn't sure if that was actually preventing you from being able to call until I changed it. But maybe you just caught it at the same time. So I'm going to turn it back to do not disturb, unless you need to hang up and call again.
No, it looks like we're good to go. I just called you the one time and you answered, so it's like everything's going smooth.
You know, you had sent me a request before, and I didn't recognize like the ninja shoes and the radio. I just thought it was like some guy, and I blocked it.
Yeah, that's been happening a lot. I might need to look into that. My crazy ninja picture isn't helping me here.
Yeah, I was like, oh, the evil altar. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, good. I'm glad to meet you, and I put up a post on my website, and hopefully that's the right information. I just kind of copied it from your website on how they can tune in live, I guess. I don't know. Is this going live, or is it a podcast for later, or what?
We are broadcasting live on the End of Days Radio Network, and then after the show's over, it's going to be released onto iTunes and podcast form and YouTube and all those other wonderful social media services.
Okay. Well, then you can give me the link later, maybe, and then I can add it to my website as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, as soon as we're finished and I've got everything completed, I'll go ahead and send you the link to the YouTube video.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Yeah, as long as you can hear me, and hopefully there won't be any weird Skype interference, and we'll just keep our fingers crossed and all will be well.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully no visitors from outside want to interfere with this broadcast, which I suspect has happened before.
Yeah, it happened on one of my interviews that was by a French guy, and it was just terrible. And I had somebody assess it who's a technology person. He said, yeah, you know, there's evidence that somebody actually did try to get through, and sometimes I really can't help it. It tends to happen more on Skype. So, yeah. Sometimes landline, it's better, actually.
But yeah, definitely. But to just get us started a little bit, one thing that I like to do when I'm starting out is go back to the past and get a little bit of information about how things started for you. Did you have any sort of, how should I word this? Did you have any, how did you get started in such an interesting field as the alien abduction research?
Is this being recorded or is this pre-recording?
We are live. However, I can edit out that stuttering that I did earlier.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay, well, we'll just go ahead and start, and I'll just give you a brief intro. My name's Eve Lorgan, as you know. Anyway, I'm a researcher and actually a counselor and hypnotherapist, more or less, in the area of what I call anomalous trauma, because it actually includes much more than what I originally intended to focus on, which really was the alien visitation abduction phenomena. And so really my work started out in the 90s. I became quite interested in trauma, especially people who've been through MKUltra and the different forms of paranormal interference and anomalous things that happened with the ET contact and the abduction phenomena. So as I did more research and I got my master's in counseling psychology to work with people, I started a group for people who've had alien abduction types of experiences and what I call the related syndromes, which can be, let's say, military abductions or forms of MK Ultra, ritual abuse, or maybe just anomalous, what they call paranormal and hyperdimensional interference that they can't quite explain, but they know something unusual is happening that's beyond the norm. So I really got a good look at that really went beyond what was in the published literature or what people were really talking about publicly, even at the current UFO conferences of the time. And so I think the one person who really inspired me to continue my research in the place where it is now is the late Dr. Carla Turner. And, of course, Barbara Bartholik was her mentor and a researcher and hypnotherapist who worked with alien abductions for like 25, 30 years. And so it was really Barbara Bartholik's in-depth ability to uncover what was happening in abductees' experiences to the people who came to her. And she uncovered a lot of what we now recognize as the screen memory overlays that often happen to people who are perceiving these kinds of experiences. So that was a big shock to many who really wanted to believe, let's say, the positive Space Brothers type of agenda. And there's still a lot of that actually going on in what I call the spiritual New Age false light community. And even people who want to promote all these positive ET types of messages and channelings. So really, I got a good look at the dark side and undercover all of that, which really boils down to a lot of trauma in many of these people's lives. So that's why I call it anomalous trauma, because it's not necessarily what most people would see as normal in human society. But it definitely happens, and it's hidden very well, and there's a reason why it's hidden. And this was another aspect I discovered, which has to do with to make it simple to use the term spiritual warfare, but really it's more complex than that. There are hidden groups and elite who are both human and non-human who are carrying out these activities for their own agenda, which I believe is primarily a spiritual one at the top, but they want to keep their activities hidden. And so there's efforts to hide and corrupt and create other narratives and other false stories about what's really happening, especially within what I call the alien abduction visitation kind of experience, as well as, let's say, the MKUltra programs and the families and bloodlines in which those occur. So really, we uncovered quite a bit over the years. And you know, it was my colleagues and myself who really worked together in the early years. So I have to really put in a good word for not only Barbara Bartholik and Dr. Carla Turner, but also James Bartley. And I also worked in my early years with Daryl Sims, who's also an alien abduction researcher, and the late Dr. Roger Lear, who was the physician and the podiatrist who actually removed physical implants from many abductees. So he carried out many surgeries, and I was actually present at a couple of them when they were being filmed and interviewed several of the people and did before and after interviews, before and after they had their implants removed. So I learned a lot about, you know, what's really happening, you know, what's being put in their bodies, how they may react or respond before and after this takes place, and the kinds of experiences and memory wipes and manipulations that take place. And for me, in the beginning, I really wanted to know, you know, what the aliens were doing and in the whole hybridization process. But what stood out is actually more prominent and really more important in the long run is the manipulation of their lives, the orchestration of the relationships and their bloodline or their families, and how they are actually manipulating and mind controlling them to carry out a particular agenda that benefits whoever these beings are, which I believe is not necessarily good for our spiritual evolution or for our true nature. And so there's a lot of controversy about that, you know, the good and the bad ones and that whole thing. But some of that is even like a good cop, bad cop type of play or a game. And so I've actually kind of separated myself from the more open ET research community. I'm not really on that line, that track, or that, what I call that theory. I see it more as a therapeutic thing to deal with people, and how I can bring them back to a state of functionality and true integration with their mind, their spirit, their soul, and to resolve the trauma so they have greater control over their lives and greater awareness. And that's basically where I'm at now. So I wrote two books. The first is called The Love Bite, Alien Interference in Human Love Relationships. And that's what I discovered early on in my support group days while I was corresponding with Barbara Bartholik, that many abductees, and especially those who also had the military abduction syndrome, their love lives were being orchestrated, engineered, or manipulated in some way, in a very big way. And really understanding the whole dynamic of that and how it plays out and who's responsible, what they do, and how it affects them and their children. And then the book I wrote more recently in 2012 is called The Dark Side of Cupid. And that's about the energy vampirism dynamic of, let's say, well, I call it The Dark Side of Cupid because it's a supernatural and paranormal interference in a love connection, where the primary signature is a third-party entity or interdimensional, hyperdimensional being. It could be an alien or an ET, or it could be a demon. Or anyway, it's like a hosting phenomena, or what some people call the organic portal thing, and how that affects our relationships and the whole hyperdimensional interference aspect, which is becoming much more popularized now because people are really starting to recognize it for what it is. So that's it in a short review. So if there's anything that you would like to pause and ask me, or a place to direct the conversation, I'll just kind of pause right now. And if there's anything you'd like to ask.
Okay, excellent. I suppose my main question to start things off would be, who are the main culprits here? Is it these reptilian aliens that I hear so much about?
Oh, a very, very good question. And this was something that we discovered. I discovered it actually through Barbara Bartholik's mentorship and also Dr. Carla Turner and some of the early researchers that I worked with, but also the people that I had direct counseling contact with, where they told me their stories or I helped regress them to find out what happened in their experiences. And sometimes, let's say if they are one of these classic alien abduction history people who have multiple alien abductions in their lives, the grays are very prominent in their experiences, which those are very popularized by some of the early writers like Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber, for example. And those are very prominent in the medical and the initial abduction procedures that are medical mostly. And then the reptilians are also very prominent in those. They may function behind the scenes as the ones in charge. But there's actually several different types of beings that are reported. But in Barbara Bartholik's work, when we worked with, let's say, when people were, you know, suddenly having these love bites, the alien love bite, where they had a sudden love obsession with somebody, and it could be, let's say, another abductee. It could be just another person in their community or across the country. They may see them in dreams, or they actually meet them in abductions where they're literally taken, and then they meet these people on the ship or some astral reality, some alternate reality, and they may be bonded or connected to very strongly. So that later in life, they recognize the person and they can't understand this connection they have. So long story short, what we discovered and what Barbie discovered was that underneath a lot of these obsessions and these connections that abductees were orchestrated and engineered with was done by reptilians. where a reptilian was actually feeding on the energy, and sometimes it would even be hosting a particular partner that they were set up with. So this is something that I discuss more at length in the Dark Side of Cupid book, where several people who reported, you know, one of these love bite experiences, and their partner actually was partially possessed or fully possessed in some cases by an entity that looked lizard-like or snake-like or could be described as a reptilian. But not all of them necessarily carry that particular mask, so to speak, because many, as we have discovered even in Malanga's work and many healers who are clairvoyant, for example, there may be different forms that these entities can take depending on what they want to project. So it can be very confusing to, but the reptilian signature in particular is very noticeable, that they're very sexual in nature. They tend to activate the sexual energy, and even the kundalini can become activated from a reptilian connection. And, you know, they have the lizard-like appearance. They're very large, usually male. And there's different colors or types of reptilians. So you can, you know, see those pictures all over the internet of the different types of reptilians. But the most of the ones that are described are actually some kind of fourth dimensional entity that superimposes or inserts itself within the energy body of a human, and then they may basically possess or partially possess that person. So you hear a lot about that, let's say, in the David Icke literature, where there's these bloodlines who are elite. They look human, but they're really reptilian, or they have reptilian hybrid genetics, but they have an outer human form. And so the more reptilian they have, or the more reptilian genetics, the more they may express kind of some of the shape-shifting characteristics. But in my view, and this is also what Dr. Corrado Malanga found, is that the aliens, basically their agenda is to parasite our mind, spirit, and soul, and our bodies in some capacity, so that they can live through us, so that we are a form of immortality for them, as long as they can insert themselves within us. So if they're successful in inserting their consciousness, or what we call the active alien memory, which is more like a consciousness program in our energy body, for example, and if that's fully expressed and the person is not aware of this paratization, then you may notice like a shape-shifting thing happen with that person, depending on the observer and how perceptive they are to see these things on maybe a more subtle level. But, you know, it's certainly been reported that people see, let's say, the pupils, for example, where they turn from round to slit. And actually, I've even seen that with people who have like a human appearance, and then there's this momentary like, whoa, did you see their eyes switch?
So some of these reptilian shape-shifting things you see like on YouTube, and people like David Icke talk about, maybe a lot of us are misinterpreting it. It could actually be a parasite taking over a host, and that's what we're seeing?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. The more, now this is one of the things that we discovered, because genetics and soul frequency are very connected. So what happens is, if someone is successfully parasited, or let's say partially possessed or fully possessed, then that frequency of that consciousness can literally create a more profound genetic expression of the characteristics of the hosting entity, so that they will be more able to shapeshift and appear in that form. So even in some, you know, supernatural and paranormal experiences, which are actually rare, let's say when someone can shapeshift into a werewolf or another form, you can literally have a real shifting take place that actually shifts on a physical level as well, and then it'll shift back. So there are those things, but they're actually more rare. I mean, more often than not, what we're really dealing with is a type of parasitization or partial possession of people in their consciousness, and then it affects their energy body, which in turn affects their physicality. So that's how it really works in the human. We are actually perfect vessels for these beings that, for one reason or another, and I believe this goes back to ancient biblical scriptures, if you want to call it, that there are some that are considered fallen, which means at some point they disconnected from an organic creation source of eternal life. And because of that disconnection, they've had to find ways to connect to those who are source, organic, eternal life connected. And then they parasite themselves within the energy body or the physical body, or even the soul body of someone to feed off that energy like we are their battery. And then they live through us. And then they hop bodies, one body after another. As long as they're able to do that and we don't kick them out, then they can do that. So that's what I think. I think there's some that are fallen and they lost their connection. Therefore, the whole game here is to keep us enslaved so they can use us to continue their form of consciousness extension, because they basically lost their original connection. So that's actually a spiritual war. It really is a spiritual game. And once you unveil the essentials of it, and you can understand and identify those dynamics of what's happening when you have an essential energy vampirism or a soul vampirism, then you know what's present. But there is extreme, very Machiavellian and intelligent deception and all manner of means of doing this, which makes it very difficult to identify when there's multiple distractions of what is the outer appearance of things, but in reality there's a magic trick being taken place, and it's all for the purpose of our taking our attention and our awareness and our energy from us to perpetuate what they want us to create for them. You see, because we are creators, as long as we're connected to the organic source of eternal life, and our spirits are, for most of us who, quote, have a spirit or have a soul, you know what I mean? So that's the game. And really, it's so in my healing work, instead of really going off about all this ET stuff and which ET is it and, you know, what happened and implants, although that does occur, it's more important in my work to get down to the root cause of someone's trauma and to go through the barriers of the illusions and the mind control programs or the false screen memories that maybe these beings may implement in their consciousness to make them believe in them in a positive way, so they give them their tacit agreement to continue to basically be vessels for these vampires, these parasites.
Now, why is it... Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, why is it that the human heart and something like love would be targeted so heavily by these beings?
Oh, that's... very good question. And that is true. I think the heart is a center of our being that is, like when I work with someone, it's very, very important. Let's say if we want to more deeply connect to our eternal nature, for example, and some people call it soul, some people call it spirit. So in Sanskrit, we might want to call it the Anandamaya Kosha, or the very root, refined aspect of consciousness, which is eternal. And that nature is pure awareness and also love. The true nature of us as eternal beings, when we really connect with that, it is this pure, spacious awareness and compassion and love. So that the more we connect with authentic love, the more we're connecting in with that eternal aspect of our being, which is extremely powerful. So when we connect with that place, and even let's say within a hypnotherapeutic guided session, when we can connect with that eternal love place through the heart, because it has to be done through the heart, then we connect with our power, and then we can connect with the willpower of that part of us to connect with more of a divine will that is good. And then that's when we can connect the power of our will to release these entities and these false programs and narratives to reconnect to our original source beingness. And so doing it through the heart is the most important way to do it. So feeling love and allowing ourselves to feel safe enough to tap into that natural part of who we are is probably the most important aspect of getting out from under the control of these beings, because even Harold Koutsbella talks about this, and he's the one who talks about the black goo and the Morgellons and these beings, these artificial, let's say, black goo beings who are only, I guess, a three-chakra-centered type of being, which is the mind, the solar, and the sexual, and without the heart. And so these beings, when they try to control, they lack the heart and they lack the empathy, and they actually are psychopathic. So we want to return to a more organic, heart-centered beingness, because that is what is much more powerful, much, much more powerful. So that is our power to overcome some of these beings and some of these parasites. So I would say that if we want to return to our power and our original nature, spiritual nature, we definitely want to connect through the heart and through the heart of compassion, and really connecting with, when we resolve traumas, we have to let go of things that actually block the heart from fully blossoming and opening up. And that's really hard, because so many of us have been through a lot of suffering and a lot of trauma, especially in, let's say, alien abductions or MK Ultra or ritual abuse. You're talking about severe trauma that can, you know, shatter the personality and even the spirit, and it affects our ability to connect deeply with the heart because of that trauma. So, you know, how we get back to our own control of our own being is through the heart and by integration of those parts of our being. So that's what I think is the most important, instead of maybe kind of dangling in the distractions of, you know, which being is doing what, and, you know, who are good and who are bad. And you'll know it. You will know those things when you connect more deeply to your authentic nature. So it's even like one of the scriptures, I don't even know which one, and I'm not totally biblical. I just want to make a point that when you seek first the kingdom of heaven within you, all things shall be revealed unto you. So therefore, it's better to seek the knowledge within through the connection of your own heart and eternal spirit. And then through that authentic connection, all things are known and realized much more easily. So you don't have to spend all your time, you know, searching on the internet and getting this external information and history and chemistry and science and be some kind of brainiac. And really, this intuitive knowledge is innate within us when we can reconnect with that. So that's what I try to do for people, is help them reconnect to that part of themselves that gives them that self-knowledge and that realization.
Are these negative entities, are they also feeding off of sexual energy or kundalini?
Absolutely. In fact, they could trigger it off, man. And that's one of the things that is kind of a complex discussion in some ways, because in many of our spiritual traditions and practices, especially those of the Far East, and let's say the Kundalini rising, and the, you know, clearing of your chakras, and the, you know, Kundalini from the root all the way to the crown, and you get this enlightenment thing. But I don't think that's actually necessary for enlightenment, and that we have a denser energy body that's part of a, what I believe to be a, oh, it's kind of hard to explain. And this goes into the Gnostic understanding of who we are and where we came from and what we are living in terms of this matrix overlay false reality. But part of our body and even our energy body is a construct of these demiurgic beings who created us. Actually, they created us in their image, but we also have a deeper essence identity, which is above and beyond the image of even these chakras, for example, or the kundalini, that there's something much more refined and aware and eternal that doesn't have anything to do with, you know, the kundalini. But the reptilians in particular, and the ones who feed, they will deliberately try to activate your kundalini, and then they usually link in through the solar plexus and the sexual chakra, although they sometimes can link in other places. But that's primarily where they like to link in. In fact, I had some correspondence recently with someone who was able to basically see this clairvoyantly, because this person, I think he was actually taking, he had done methamphetamine, which is, some people call it crack or ice in different countries, but it's a type of stimulant, a speed that opens up you to the fourth dimension or the astral realm. And what happens is sometimes when you get high on these drugs, it opens up not only your perception, but it leaves your energy body open to astral invasion. So in the fourth dimension, like the lower fourth dimension, these reptilians reside, and they're basically feeding off of our energy and basically manipulating reality in this fourth dimension. So when you open yourself up to this through certain kinds of drug use, they link into you and you could actually see them. And then some of these people who become addicted to the crack methamphetamine or even certain prescription drugs like Adderall, which is a ADD drug for hyperactive attention deficit disorder. It's the same thing. So it can open you up to these things, and then these beings will link in astrally, and then they'll start to have these reptilian, you know, paranormal weird shit start happening in their lives, or they become suddenly addicted to sex, because when they link in those chakras, they basically milk it and they overstimulate it. And then pretty soon you have like exaggerated sexual urges, which actually are, they're basically milking off of you, and they'll get you addicted to porn and all kinds of things. And pretty soon your life drastically changes once one of these beings links into you. So, I mean, I've had report after report of this through, you know, the crack cocaine thing. And this is something that Barbara Bartholek also came across when she worked with numbers of people where there was waves of activity in her area. And then they would suddenly, you know, get into this methamphetamine, and it would just create this whole reptilian invasion type of thing. So, yeah, there's certain drugs that definitely open that up. So when they do link in, you'll know it because you have a hyper stimulation that can take effect, and then your dreams will change, or it'll be, you know, they'll actually come to you. It'll even seem like physically they can come to you, and you'll see them, and they'll basically rape you or have sex with you, and they, you know, they'll do that, and that's common report.
So these things can actually link up with your mind and give you sexual perversion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, James Bartley wrote quite a long article about that years ago. I think it's called Understanding the Reptilian Mind, or one of the several articles he wrote by interviewing many people who were having reptilian connections and abductions. And sometimes these reptilians, let's say in the MyLab phenomena, which is what I call the military abduction component of someone who already has had some kind of alien abduction history. And oftentimes people of certain bloodlines, they're already taken, then they'll get co-opted into a military component where they're used as some kind of Manchurian candidate for another agenda that's linked in with reptilian control, basically. So sometimes these MyLabs, we found, you know, several maybe female MyLabs, but it could be male also, who would actually have a primary handler who was a reptilian. And so the reptilian, you know, would come in and sexually assault or activate the person's kundalini, or they would act very controlling over, let's say, particular female abductees who were their control or whatever. And then they wouldn't want them to have boyfriends or whatever. And so they would basically interfere with the relationship so that they wouldn't be able to have sex with their husbands or their boyfriends. And then the reptilian would basically just want them all to themselves. Or they would just activate their sex drive to a natural degree to basically, you know, get their energy milked and to, you know, feed off of it. Or to activate it for, this sounds nuts, but, you know, this happened enough to be reported over and over again to know that it's a common theme that when that energy is activated, it can also open up your energy and awareness on a psychic level. So oftentimes people who will have, let's say, these love bites, and they're having a very strong connection with someone, let's say a man who has hosting or partial possession or full possession by a reptilian. It could be a Draco, could be another entity. And then just that connection activates their kundalini, and it makes their psychic awareness just profoundly exaggerated. So they become very, very psychic at the same time. And to the point of being literally telepathic with the other person and sometimes other people.
So these things can actually intensify, or they can cause us to be psychic.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's one of the big things. I mean, it's so amazing, you know, when I think about it now, that sometimes, you know, like I say, a love bite, your first love bite, will activate you to all kinds of awarenesses that, you know, there's a positive and a negative end to this. And the positive end, that you could very much actually be in love with someone more than you've ever felt, and to the point of having literal soul immersion with the other person. and it's very profound. And some people think it's their twin flame, and there's this whole, you know, twin flame thing going on where many think that they've found their twin flame, but it really is a type of manipulation. So I'm not saying that the other human being who's involved as the partner is necessarily a bad person. Sometimes there is what I call the third party entity that is manipulating that connection so that they catalyze and amplify certain things to make them have more powerful connection between each other. But ultimately, there is manipulation on one end or the other. So it could be both partners who, let's say, have abduction histories, or maybe in their family line, there is some kind of what I call the ancestral blood oath component in their family lines, where those beings have been following them for maybe generations. So, for example, this is actually common. If someone's reporting this to me, I usually get their history, their family history, and their, you know, the blood type. And, you know, I have a questionnaire that I give them according to abduction markers and that kind of thing. But often they may be part of an ancestral line that has a genetic component that is of desirability for certain beings and certain agendas. And then in that line, there may be the occult blood oath connection, where one of their, could be their parents, could be one of their ancestors who literally made a vow or blood oath with a certain, it could be Freemasonry, it could be witchcraft, it could be the Catholic Church. It could be something that they made a vow to where the spiritual force behind it was one of these hyperdimensional entities that are literally feeding off our life force. And once you make a vow and that vow is intact, they have legal spiritual rights over you and your spiritual downline unless you change it and you say no. And so a lot of the work, you know, that I also do is helping people to realize, you know, if there's something in their line they need to look at, then they need to break that and consciously say, I do not agree. I break that vow and that connection. And you have to verbally give your, what I call it, your lack of consent for what they're assuming is their control. So a lot of times our silence and our ignorance of what these spiritual rules and how they're playing this game is, if we're ignorant of it or we're silent and we don't consciously let it be known on some level to not agree and to disconnect, then they have full legal right over us and to manipulate us in our lives. So it's very deceptive on how these beings do what they do, but they find legal loopholes to do this on a spiritual level.
There's a friend of mine who recently had a very odd experience where she was, I think she was just sitting in bed or in her kitchen or something, and she felt what felt like a long tongue shoot into her mouth, almost completely down her throat, like it was trying to kiss her. Does this sound like one of those reptilian attacks to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've heard that report that they do have the tongue thing. And yeah, I've heard that on a few occasions. That can happen. And sometimes they make certain kinds of noises and certain kinds of mannerisms. So, I mean, it could be, you know, a wide range of things, but that's actually common. Like one of the things, it's in my Dark Side of Cupid book. One of the clients that I did their story, and this is actually common. You know, you've heard of sexually transmitted diseases, right? Well, yeah. You know, take it up a notch and there's sexually transmitted demons or entities where, let's say you go out on a date with someone, maybe you have sex with them or whatever, or after the first time you're together, then you start having these weird visitations by these entities who are basically astrally raping you or suddenly invading your dreams or like doing weird things that almost like feel physical and strange things where they start like linking into you. But it came from, let's say, the person you were dating, so that just by opening your energy field up, you got their entity, and that from that time on, then they manipulate your life from that moment on, even if you break up with the person. So sometimes these beings find ways to link in through certain connections with people. So that's why I always find it amazing now to understand how deep the rabbit hole goes. And it sounds like a wild conspiracy theory, but as we open up and refine our awareness on many different levels, we start to understand how things really happen, where, let's say, there's a fourth dimensional influence on what happens in our 3D world, and even more refined influences, let's say, even within our dream consciousness, or even the way we think on a mental conceptual level in terms of our ego sense of self in these physical bodies, that even our physical bodies is a type of technology of the ones who created us in our genetic containers, which they call it containers, you know. So it pays to be aware and to be still and to start observing how things really work, as opposed to what we're being necessarily taught in school or history or fake history or the fake news or whatever you want to call it, that we find truths by observing and finding it out for yourself, actually.
Is the government actually helping these bad aliens?
Well, I mean, it depends on which government, right? Which level of government. And, you know, more often than not, things are like a pyramid where, you know, let's say at the top of the pyramid is the few who can control and manipulate the many underneath. And at the lower levels or even the middle level, they may not have the full awareness of somebody, quote, at the top of the pyramid, so that we can't necessarily blame people who are at the bottom or even the middle of the pyramid for what's happening at the top, because they may not have the awareness and they think they're really like helping the government or doing a good job, or middle management is trying to, you know, do a good job to make sure the employees are happy and believe in the company and this and that. But at the top, you know, they keep it compartmentalized. They're actually controlling on all these different levels so that to carry out the agenda. So, you know, when you say the government, it's like, well, which part of the government? You know, at the top, they may have knowledge of doing things for a higher hidden elite or a hidden hand, which is actually occult in nature and doesn't have anything to do with national boundaries. So, and this goes back to, of course, you know, conspiracy theory of the ruling families and the genetics, who's behind them, and even some of the original biblical scriptures of, well, you know, the line of Cain, for example, versus, you know, the serpent seed, and that's more basic, or the Anunnaki, or, you know, which lines are the ones that are running things, and how many beings are really running this place, and which types, and who are the true landlords of this operation, and I think there's several that are fighting over us, actually. So it depends, you know, who's at the top. The ones at the top know, but the ones in the middle and the bottom, they really don't know who they're working for, and it's unfortunate because there's a lot of people who are believing false narratives about who they're working for and what they believe in, and they think they're doing a good job, and really they're just tools and pawns for the higher agenda that is basically working for another agenda unbeknownst to them. So you can't really blame people who don't know, but at the same time, it's very frustrating because this is why I don't like to get involved in politics, because it's kind of like David Icke says, it's the twiddle-dee-dee, twiddle-dee-da, whether it's the Republican or the Democrat, it really doesn't matter. It's a distraction amongst those who think that it's really between those two parties, and doesn't have anything to do with those two parties. It has to do with what's going on at the top and how they're manipulating people on the bottom to carry out their agenda, and how they can make us so stupid to think it's actually a Democrat or a Republican issue. See what I'm saying? It doesn't have anything to do with politics. It's just politics helps play out the agenda.
Do programs like MK Ultra still go on today?
Oh gosh, yes. It's probably bigger today than it ever has been, and it's much more refined and streamlined and hidden. And the technology, I think, is getting better and better. And this is what I've noticed in my clients over the years. In my first initial introduction to someone who was a, what I call a satanic ritual abuse victim, who was part of MK Ultra from what I call the Illuminati bloodline, satanic bloodline, was like 1989. That was the first introduction to this, where they have multiple personalities, what they call alter personalities, that have been deliberately created through systematized trauma in rituals, through satanic ritual abuse and other forms of abuse. And they create these alter personalities that may have different program functions depending on the cult or the ones controlling them. So MKUltra is actually a creation that was originally done through these high-level bloodline families for thousands of years, you know, since ancient times, ancient Babylonian times is ancient as the, you know, Babylonian, Anunnaki, ancient Egyptian, whatever. This has been going on for thousands of years through certain families, and then it has military applications. So in MKUltra, you may have the more military applications or the entertainment industry or through religion or politics. So they usually use certain bloodline families where they already have the ancestral agreements and blood oaths to carry out these things because they have to have some kind of spiritual permission, but they also have a genetic component that is desirable for them to be good operatives or good mentoring candidates. So it definitely happens, and it's more observable in what I call the My Lab and the, you know, like the Kathy O'Brien stories and some of those original stories. Those were the more overt MKUltra ritual abuse stories. But in the many of the My Lab things, it's not so overt in their outer life. Like, you don't always see their families, you know, going to rituals at night and, you know, having an overt, obvious nature. Some of them are very well hidden. They don't even act like they have MPD or multiple personality disorder. They don't, you don't see the missing time. You might see PTSD and they might have these weird dreams and they think that they're just having weird dreams of having this another life, being some soldier, you know, carrying out these functions or speaking in all these different languages. And lo and behold, they're like, you know, a secret My Lab who's got this secret life thing going on. So I think their technology is much better now in terms of how they're able to control, manipulate, and program our minds. And this has to happen through trauma, though. So trauma is actually the name of the game of spiritual control on this planet. So in order to regain our power, we must resolve and heal the trauma and integrate. So that's why I focus more on healing and integration and counseling and trauma resolution as the way back to our power, control, and integration, because it ultimately is always starts through some form of trauma at an early age.
Now, this might be an unusual question, but could these reptilian aliens actually be satanic in nature, or do they have some religious belief that might link them to the occult world?
Oh, yes, they do. They have their own religion and beliefs, and they are very, they're very much into their own rituals and belief system that is unique. And some people have spoken about it publicly. Like, I know David Icke has probably some information on that in his research, and, you know, Arizona Wilder, when he interviewed her years ago, and the whole Mother Goddess interview, which was like way back, I think in the 90s or the early 2000s, she talked a bit about that. So they do have their own religion and belief system of, you know, whatever is the truth for them, and they hold that in high regard, and they're very ritualized. But in my opinion, I mean, this is subjective in some ways, because unfortunately, humanity has a bad case of amnesia, right? In terms of what is our true history and what do we really remember in our own personal spiritual history? Most of the time, we only remember our current incarnation, or, you know, even we're lucky even if we remember early parts of our childhood. But if we can come to a true memory of, you know, the different incarnations we've had and what happened when we first came here, or to the earth plane, we might have a memory of some of what has really happened over the years with respect to these interfering non-human entities or beings and how they interfered and why and all of that. So I think history has been corrupted and twisted even in the religious scriptures. There's a lot of corruptions, but there's also a lot of truth. So I think that we need to come to our own memory and our own realization of what really happened and reconstruct it from our own deep realization, because you can't always assume that, you know, your history books is going to tell you the truth, or even, you know, your fellow psychic who tells you what they think they see in your past life. You really have to realize it for yourself. And I know I'm kind of getting off track. about the reptilians and their belief system, but I know what I was going to kind of go on, and depends on how much time we have. But in the original, this is what I believe, in the original creation of, let's say, Earth, even though I don't even know if it's a planet per se, but let's say in this realm, the original organic realm creation may have been made for us in a type of androgynous light body, and that these original androgynous light bodies may have had a female appearance and a kind of, I don't even know if they self-reproduced when they were in their light bodies, but I think some of the original ones were like goddesses, and that there was an invasion or some kind of downgrade where a genetic interference and a raping occurred that created hybrid bloodlines, which downgraded the original form. And so from that point forward, and in the Gnostic scriptures talk a bit about this within their own stories. And that's even hard to understand because there's so many different variations of that theme. But I think when they split the sexes, they created a disempowerment of basically the male and the female. They took the light out through the female, which was the spiritual memory essence, and that was actually needed for the male part to remember its oneness with the female as one being. So basically, the demiurgic infection created a type of patriarchal dominance and a dominator system to oppress the feminine epinoia aspect, which was the spiritual memory of beingness and the true supernatural power of the human being, which was originally androgynous. So in order to disempower the entire human race, they have to disempower the female, and they have to hijack it so that they're always controlled and manipulated by the dominator aspect, which doesn't have the true intuitive wisdom of the spirit. So we basically have a huge reversal going on in terms of spiritual power on this planet, which is why the dominator systems is destined towards using humans as slaves or destroying the entire creation. So we have to have a return to the spiritual memory of our beingness and the integration of the male-female aspect to really come back to our power. So I think that, you know, it's been downgraded so many times that our original memory is hidden for most people. Most people just don't remember. But there are those people who do, and there are the certain bloodlines. This goes back to the certain bloodlines that are highly watched and always interfered with. And these are the ones that I call the Starfire women in particular, but it also goes through the male lines. But it's a type of spiritual fire, for lack of a better term, and consciousness that can be traced through certain bloodlines. And those bloodlines have a lot of spiritual and supernatural power. And certain lines also have certain supernatural or even more astral power. For example, the Native Americans have a lot of the astral power, and that's why you see, like in my work, a lot of the Mylabs or the abductees, at least in the North American continent, you will see a lot of them have the Native American component or the Native American Celtic component, or in their bloodline, they always have something that has a high, I'd say, psychic supernatural ability quality in there, because they always want that. They want to corrupt and control it, because that's a highly prized genetic component. So there's certain things in certain bloodlines that are highly prized, and then they want to control, exploit, and then use that power for their own agenda. So
could this be why witches were hunted for many centuries?
Oh, yes. In fact, you know what I think is that, I mean, there's good and bad. There's obviously some that are evil, and then there's some that I believe that actually were what I call some of the original, I call it the original mother goddess lines, which you can always trace it back to a female, because even the Starfire thing is a matrilineal descendancy, which came through the original female lines, because that's where the original life force came from. Because the fallen ones, they were disconnected from that, and they tended to take a male, I'm not saying this to be against males, but they tended to take a male form that would rape or impregnate the female goddess form and then create a hybrid downline, right? And many hybrid prototype downlines. But it was a male infection from the, let's say, the demiurgic archontic lines, which were disconnected from the true organic life force itself. So the starfire of the original stuff always came from a goddess line. Okay. So that's why they're always, hunting down these goddesses. And so they would call them witches. They just had natural, supernatural abilities. What's wrong with having natural abilities of being able to perceive energy and connection with animals and nature? It doesn't have anything to do with being evil or calling on evil spirits. But some witches did do that later on, But I think there are some innate abilities that don't have anything to do with any ritual practices or anything. It just has to do with your essence and your frequency. So this comes back to why I'm finding in my work, why certain lines, and there's certain ones that are very, very unique that I think it's a genetic or it's a soul frequency thing because they link together. Somehow they link together. The soul frequency can only be expressed in certain genetic lines. For example. So then they hunt those ones down to either control, exploit, and use it for their own agenda, like in the reptilian agenda, or they'll try to wipe them out, or they'll constantly interfere with you if you go against their program and find out who they are and what they're really doing, and then you try to use your true supernatural connection and ability to become free and help others become free in a really good way, then they are after you like hound dogs from day one. And I'm telling you, they know who you are before you know who you are in this life, which is like why many are actually interfered with from birth or from childhood. And so that's what I'm finding, is that there are some lines that are hunted down from the very beginning.
You did mention the Catholics earlier. And one thing that I think of when I think of the Catholics, no offense to anybody, are things like the Spanish Inquisition, the witch burning, like we talked about earlier. And also there was a period where they were actually killing off the Gnostics. Could they have actually been getting orders to kill the Gnostics because maybe they knew too much about these things?
Totally. I would totally agree. I'm a fan of the Nag Hammadi Library. That's my phone. Just ignore that. But yes, I think there's a lot of truth that they discovered in the early years, and then they were hidden, and then they weren't discovered until, 1947? But then there's others that have been carried out through oral lineages, even in Europe, but like the Cathars, for example. So they did know. They knew there was a control system going on and a hijack of religions and a hijack of the original Jesus story. So... And then once you find out and you know who's really playing the game and how they're playing it, they want to wipe you out, man. And that's how it's been going for thousands of years. And then the unfortunate thing is how these high-level archontic, demiurgic, demonic, fallen, whatever you want to call it, they're very, very wise in how they carry out their corruption and co-optation of just about every single religious narrative or spiritual practice. So it's very difficult because you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to the Gnostic scriptures or even the biblical scriptures or the Taoist or, whatever religion. You have to really seek out, the truth in every single one of them because you innately recognize it in your spirit. And so I think there's some people who just know in their spirit, you have this innate recognition, and then you just kind of follow that internal knowing, and then you can get confirmation down the road as you do more explorations. So I would just encourage everybody to do the research that they can to more deeply connect with the original truth that they remember and have kind of like a, I think that you have the pure desire in your heart and soul to want to seek out the truth and want to love fully and connect with that innate nature, that it will come into you and whatever way you can receive it. So I have hope. I have hope that, that can happen and it's not a hopeless situation.
Are there certain people that, like you said earlier, where you mentioned certain people being targeted because the reptilians or these forces know who you are, are there also certain people that get targeted by the alien love bite phenomena?
Yeah, I think so. This is one of the things that we discovered. It was like, oh, God. Sometimes, once they get you for your first love bite, well, it depends on how aware you are, right? to recognize the patterns of how this happens. And it's, hindsight is 20/20 vision, really. I mean, sometimes you don't know until you're, you know, in your middle age years that most of these things were some kind of orchestration according to a program or a manipulation. So you can have one after the other, and some seem to have them more than others. Or, for example, like there's some who have, this is one thing I noticed, if there's a reptilian, that's, let's say, the reptilian control in someone's life, and that reptilian may be involved in that ancestral line, or let's say that reptilian may be the actual handler or controller of a particular female abductee, for example. And so that reptilian who's the controller, and he may be following, or that reptilian may be following them for many lifetimes, not just that one life. And so they will continue to manipulate their relationships in their lives, so that basically every single relationship has been pretty much manipulated or orchestrated or interfered with in some way by that primary reptilian handler, until that person basically disconnects and does their healing work and basically breaks all contracts and vows so that they get this thing out of their lives. And that can be a very complex issue, because it's not so simple as, let's say, an exorcism. It's very deeply connected with trauma and how we process trauma in our lives and our belief systems and our subconscious patterns and what we believe and how we emotionally react to things. So we have to do the deep healing work, and that takes time, and that takes, you know, a investment to truly do healing on a lot of different levels, to take self-responsibility for what we can do to get this influence out of our lives. And so often, more often than not, I mean, it happens more in some families or in some people than others. And then there's also the aspect where, you know, you can get an infection, what we call an infection in your life, where, let's say, you opened yourself up through a drug addiction or alcohol addiction, where you let down your spiritual boundaries and your energetic boundaries by not taking responsibility, and then these beings invaded your field, and from that point onward, then they're stuck in your field, and they manipulate you until you get rid of them. So sometimes they can get you just because you weren't playing safe recreational drug use or safe sex or something like that. Or if you dated, let's say, a witch or a sorcerer or a bad guru. And I get a lot of those reports where the report is someone has been in a cult that seems good with some wonderful swami or guru, and it turns out he's like some high-level Draco-hosted vampire who does these twin flame astral unions and controls them spiritually, and he'll control thousands of people and feed off thousands or hundreds and mind control them. And then he looks like he's this wonderful guru, and really he's just from some, you know, high level vampire. And they'll connect with people, and you have to disengage from that contract and that connection to get that influence out of your life. So I see a lot of that within, let's say, the false religions and the false spiritual gurus, that a lot of them are just high level vampires.
Is it true that being abused early on in life, in childhood, can make you more susceptible to things like possession or the alien love bite scenario?
Yes, I would say that the trauma part is a huge part of how they implement the control. And let's say if there's these hyperdimensional beings who've been running humanity like a farm, one of their primary modus operandi is to traumatize the spirit and traumatize the person early in life to get a dissociation or a split. And then from that dissociation, they link in and they're able to better control and manipulate from the trauma. So it's through trauma, through the religious belief systems and the agreements of entrapment that we do by what we believe in or who we give our worship to. But it's usually sexual abuse is actually the number one best way that they can manipulate and try to traumatize someone. So that's why it's so important to do the healing and the personal history. We have to really uncover our personal history and release whatever that pain and suffering is, and whatever beliefs we might have held at, you know, let's say even a primal age, when you're being abused, you have a whole different view of your reality, and you have to release that in order to reconnect with your organic truth beingness that is much more powerful. And then you basically seal the cracks of how these beings, you know, get in, because otherwise they will be able to continue to interfere until we really do our healing work. And so, yeah, abuse and trauma is definitely the number one way that they can get themselves in our lives and interfering.
Could certain celebrities like Lady Gaga or Katy Perry, they often get accused of being MK Ultra. Could they be victims of something like this, some kind of satanic ritual abuse?
That's very possible. I would say that, you know, any high level entertainment industry icon is more likely to be used in some capacity for an agenda. And it may be that they have been abused or MK Ultra'd, or they're in some kind of bloodline family where something occurred. That's more often than not, that's the case, that they have been abused. I mean, even when we look at statistics, and that's what's reported, let's say even in this country, and I can't name the report, but I think at least 30% of women have reported some kind of sexual abuse or assault. But in places like war-torn countries and Eastern Europe, or certain religious backwards countries or whatever, I mean, it's greater than 50% that the women have been sexually abused, or even the children. So when you think about the way these beings get in, it's always through some form of sexual abuse, which goes back to, in my view, the whole archontic demiurgic plan was to sexually abuse in order to gain entrance and power into our lives and our spiritual power. So sexual abuse is the one means in which they continue their control and manipulation of humanity. So, in fact, most prostitutes, I think it's 80 to 90% of prostitutes have been abused as children or as teenagers, or the runaway teenagers. So the only reason they're even involved in the sex worker industry is because they were tortured and abused, or sexually abused, or they're forced into it by economic duress. Most women would not willfully choose to do that, or males to do that, unless they were already abused first. So this whole system was actually created, in my view, by the whole demiurgic fallen corruption to create this problem. I don't think humanity, if we were left to our own devices of not being abused and manipulated by the religions or whatever, we wouldn't do and choose what we're doing. This has been manipulated from day one. So even, you know, like the porn addictions and everything else, that's completely unnatural. It's unnatural to the human, but things have been manipulated. They've been so manipulated. And really, when you realize the commonality of sexual abuse is so huge, I mean, that to me tells me everything. And the sexual energy itself is the life force and is access to the spirit. So that's why it's such a sacred part of our being that should never be abused, especially when people are really young. It's a way that these beings get in and affect our psyche as well.
Could this be why it always seems like society is, not to be judgmental towards anybody's sexual preference, but it seems like the envelope is always being pushed in terms of what we see in front of our eyes on TV and stuff like that. Like, for many years, they showed two women kissing on TV, and that was a huge thing. And then it turned into guys kissing, and that was a huge thing. Now it seems to be pushing towards like a BDSM, 50 Shades of Grey type of thing.
That's true. I know, I see it on movies, and they're really trying to do the bisexuality thing, and they're really promoting that. And I don't think it's natural. I mean, there's so much that's on TV. And one of the things that I've noticed, it seems like the newer videotography and probably the HDTV and some of the newer plasma screens, I don't know what it is, but there's something about even the lighting of videos is like this dull, lower frequency kind of thing that like lowers your consciousness. And it depends on, you know, how much TV or movies you watch, or even on the computer, that it definitely affects your dreams. And, you know, one way to even do an experiment with yourself is to basically not watch TV for a while and then do a silent retreat where you practice basically not having your consciousness be affected by videos and movies or even music, and do a silent retreat out in nature, or practice what I call lucid dreaming or dream yoga, and then just observe the change in your consciousness from what basically enters into your visual field or your hearing or what's in your mind. Because I notice a huge effect from just watching movies at night and how it affects my dreams and my consciousness. So it's, I think things are designed to affect our consciousness, even like Facebook. I mean, one of the things that gets reported to me is, let's say, when people are becoming psychically attacked, and they don't know like where it's coming from, and they can't understand why suddenly they're getting psychically attacked. And sometimes they can trace it back to being on Facebook or joining a Facebook group, for example, or a certain forum online where they somehow psychic energies are opened up through online communications more now than they used to be. And I think there's some way in which things come through where it actually enters your dreams, and it's like reality is being manipulated now through a lot of technology in our consciousness. So I think it would pay to just, you know, do a diet and not watch TV, not watch movies, not even listen to music unless it's like super positive, good frequency stuff, and then just observe the difference. Which brings me to something that I was going to say about, I had a client who reported the methamphetamine and the reptilian connection and the whole Adderall, the hyperactive pharmaceutical for hyperactive kids. And one of the things that he noticed is that, I guess when he was taking Adderall or whatever it was, that he noticed these reptilians that kept linking in his solar plexus and affecting his consciousness. And, you know, like all this perverted imagery was going through his mind. It was like, this is not me, you know, this is definitely interference. And he started playing these Tibetan bowls and the high frequency tones that come from some of these sacred bowls. And when he played that music, the entities couldn't stand that vibration and they basically disengaged. So there's certain actually positive sound frequencies that you can, you know, do or listen to that can help maybe break some of the lower attached entities. So yeah, like that happen.
One thing that I wanted to ask you, I do have a lot of friends that are into fringe things, paranormal, even occult type of things. And a lot of them like to either channel themselves or they like to go see somebody that does channeling. And I kind of try to warn them about it, but I'm not really that sure myself. Is channeling dangerous? Can it open the doors? Can it open us up to deception or even open up our auras to allow attack?
Oh, I think it could, definitely. And, you know, there's always the question, who are we channeling and are they good or are they not? And, you know, it depends on the person. But, you know, based on the reports that I have had over the years, I err on the side of caution simply because it's just so we live in a predatory universe. So it would be like if we go out in a swamp and then you expect not to get bitten by mosquitoes. Well, you're going to get bitten by mosquitoes if you go out in a swamp. Well, it's the same thing in the fourth dimension, and you leave yourself open, you will probably have beings that try to enter and try to trick you. And I mean, I remember stories from Barbara Bartholik who reported things, which she talked about a main channeler cult leader in the Pacific Northwest who's been around for quite some time. I won't name names, but...
Oh, I know who it is.
But that one was actually run by a very high level reptilian. And I remember, you know, she did some investigations in the Pacific Northwest. And this was like in the very early 90s where there was a wave of UFO activity and a wave of alien abduction reports, missing time and unusual trauma, like PTSD after a wave where they started having weird reptilian alien, you know, stuff. And love bites, right? So people would suddenly have love bite for another person and they're married to somebody else and they're having all this strange paranormal activity. So Barbara went in there to do some regressions with some of the people who reported not only the sightings in this wave, but abductions, and she found that there was a lot of reptilian involvement in this particular wave of sightings, which were construed by this cult as being benevolent beings that were part of that same, spiritual hierarchy, and that they even sent their high-level, their spiritual guru assistants to basically force Barbie to hand over all her video and audio tapes of her regressions, which basically proved there was nothing but a bunch of reptilian crap that was in doing all these love bites and, negative stuff. She went through the screen memories and found out they were abducting and implanting and doing all kinds of horrible things. But the cult leader wanted to make everybody think that these were wonderful spaceships from their space brothers and blah, blah, blah. And, and running the show. So they were basically part of the whole reptilian agenda, some of these channelers. So that's why I'm saying you got to be really careful with some of the channeling and some of the cult groups. More often than not, they're run by a big fat reptilian or a Draco or some entity that's just feeding on all the attention.
It seems like there's more and more of these types of gurus popping up on YouTube every day.
Yeah, and I'm not saying all of them are bad and you really have to use your discernment, but I think one of the big lessons in my life was, how can we discern clearly and have a more pure perception based on our spiritual discriminating wisdom, and how can we get through the illusions that's being bombarded? We're being bombarded with a lot of illusions and distractions. And how can we perceive clearly? And really the bottom line is it's somewhat of a yogic kind of thing, but we have to be really clear on what we're believing and what we really are desiring, and to be honest with ourselves about what we really want and what we believe, and to try to let go of illusions and our fears and our trapped traumas and our compulsive, let's say, programs that are going on in our consciousness. We have to really let go of that in order for a more pure perception to arise from an authentic part of our being. And when we can let go of certain belief systems or desires, we may see things for what they are. And so a good example of that would be, there are many women who want to believe, they've met their twin flame, and it could be a man who thinks he met the twin flame, but it's having all these weird paranormal things happening, and they may be involved in a cult group, and they go on this mission, and they think they met their twin flame, and they're having all these astral connections, and they want to believe with all their heart and soul because they want it so bad. They want so bad to have that twin flame connection because there's an addiction component to this. And we talked about this on a panel called the Love Bite Plus. It was like over 3 hours long, where we talked about when someone has a love bite, like a really good alien love bite, let me tell you, it's powerful. It can create an obsession. You can have, strong energetic and sexual chemistry things that are through the roof, and you don't want to let go of it. There's an addictive component to that, to really want to believe that that's your twin flame. And so you have to be willing to let go of some of these things, almost like being willing to let go of addictions, so that you can have a greater good for your own well-being.
Eve, can they actually... Like, let's say that we have one of these beings in our life or in our family line. Will they or can they actually block us from entering into healthy relationships?
Oh, absolutely. They do that all the time. God. In fact, one of the biggest reports I get, along with people who have corresponded with me over the years, who have done their in-depth healing work, and they've done their own research, and they may not be people who go out there public speaking at all, but they're people who are very discerning, and they've done their homework, and they're just awesome people, right? They're brilliant, they're loving, they're spiritually aware, but they find themselves isolated and basically attacked sometimes hyperdimensionally, so that they can never really find a good, healthy relationship. And because of who they are and the frequency they're emitting, a lot of times they're being kept from true, good, healthy love relationships. And I really believe that there is an attack on the ones who really are awake and really vibing high, so to speak, that they try to keep us isolated from one another. But all I can say is if all of us kind of people got together in a town, and if there was even 10 in a town, we can do such damage to the false narratives that they would be scared shitless. Because when you really connect with your true spiritual nature and you know and you can see through things and you connect in with that power, you're considered extremely dangerous to these groups and these entities. They hate you. In fact, you know, one of the interesting things, I mean, I'm always amazed at some of the reports I get, but certain, let's say, very high-vibing people who have certain qualities where they have a lot of love and they have just this wonderful essence. And sometimes these people, when they go out in town, for example, and they're vibing high and they forget to like turn the light down a little bit, and they'll just go in town and do the shopping or whatever. But amongst us, let's say there's some amongst us who are not, either not human or they don't have souls, or they're like hosted by demons, for lack of a better term. And so that high frequency causes those people who are basically hosted by demons and entities to go nuts, where they'll suddenly be like normal. And then when you get close to them, it's like the demons in them get completely activated. It's like it causes them pain, and the demons within these people will like take them over and try to attack them. It's like, I don't know if you saw that in the Matrix movie where, I don't know if they called it an agent,
yeah,
where somebody who's just like a, you know, organic portal puppet who's not awake yet, and then they get suddenly taken over by one of the agents, and then they do something, or they shapeshift or whatever, or they act mean like to the person who's awake. Well, things like that actually really happen. So that certain demons get completely activated, or they go nuts around some people who are very high vibing spiritual people, where it literally causes those around them to get agitated. And sometimes it causes the demon within that other person to be so agitated to try to attack that other person of light. Whereas normally, you know, the demons would remain hidden, because a lot of times they remain very hidden within people. Unless they're activated. So sometimes even in these healing, quantum healing processes, like in things like holographic kinetics or Aboriginal Dreamtime healing, we work with the spirit of the person to go to the origin of a certain issue, a trauma, whatever. And then sometimes there's entities that are actually responsible for some of these weird things that happen. And then when you get to the root of it, the entity will come and they'll growl and they'll like temporarily take the person over. They may be writhing like a snake or like growling and making noises and basically take them over. And then basically you get rid of the entity. But sometimes they surface very quickly when you're around spiritually powerful people. It just causes it to happen.
Could this be the main or one of the main culprits behind gang stalking?
Well, yeah, gang stalking is very real. And some people think there's a technology to it that has to do with like smart dust and nanotechnology and frequencies, which could very well be true and part of that. And I wouldn't discount that there are technologies that can do these things. But more often than not, I think there's a demonic component where what I'm noticing is as you become more aware and you start to perceive things on a clairvoyant level, you will see that some people are more easily interfered with by what I call the hyperdimensional entities, demons, forces. And if they don't have a good control over their consciousness and their spirit, they could be temporarily manipulated to interfere with someone else who's, quote, the target. So that can happen where they don't even know they're being used in a synchronistic fashion to affect someone else. So sometimes it's a completely unaware thing. And then sometimes it's a fully cognizant thing. And one of the things that has been discussed, and I think it's on an Alfred Weber show, actually, where they talked about targeting technologies, where there's certain groups, certain government-related intelligence agencies, social service agencies, Department of Homeland Security, or certain cult-related things, where certain individuals basically are being used to target others who have been chosen for one reason or another to be targeted. Oftentimes these people who are being targeted are, let's say, they're MKUltra people who have hidden histories of being MKUltra, ritual abuse, or they're a MyLab or an abductee, or maybe just someone who's waking up from programming, and because they emit a certain frequency or they've been found out, then they're basically targeted by all these others who work through the targeting technologies or through the interdimensional entities that work through them. So basically, this is really scary. I mean, I've heard several reports. It's not just singular reports where there's certain who are, let's say, I don't even want to say who they're employed by, because I don't want to name names, but there's certain, we can call it military industrial complex government intelligence circles, whatever, may have individuals that are basically being used to target others in ways that defy what you think is normal human behavior, which border on supernatural possession and telepathic control and manipulation of the other person, like sudden dream invasion by people who are acting as portals to be targeting other people. So they're basically possessed, for lack of a better term. They're possessed and they're being used to target other people because they're either not fully human, or they're organic portals, or they're completely implanted and robotized and they're taken over by AI or whatever. But there's reports of that going on quite a bit, actually.
Eve, have you heard of these shadow people that so many folks around the world are reporting?
Oh, yeah. Quite common. They're common in the alien abduction, you know, part of that syndrome where they'll see shadow people coming through the walls. And in fact, one of them in my book, I think it's the second in the Dark Side of Cupid book, I have a case history, which was actually an original case of Barbara Bartholix, of a psychologist who became friends with a couple who lived right across from NASA and was employed, I think, by NASA. And he was a psychologist, and they were involved in channeling. And long story short, he became aware of shadow people and interference and, like, demonic torture by these shadow people. But it was all like linked in with some kind of spooky NASA thing or, you know, alien abduction. And then they were channeling, and it was just a very odd story. He ended up committing suicide as a result of being tortured and taunted by these shadow people. But it was as if these shadow people were humans, but they were taunting them. So, yeah, that's very real, the shadow people. But sometimes they don't do anything at all. You just see them and they're just like, oh, shadow people, you know.
Let's say that I suspect that I might be in one of these parasitic alien love bite relationships. Are there some immediate signs or clues that I could look out for to so that I would know to end this relationship?
Well, in my book, The Dark Side of Cupid has a good set of parameters to, and I tried to make it real simple, like I called it the unholy triad of the dark side of Cupid, where if you had two of the three parameters and descriptions, then it was most likely to be a relationship that was being manipulated. And so one of them would be like the magical, supernatural, paranormal anomalies that happen only in conjunction with that person or relationship with them. And but that alone didn't necessarily denote that that is a case. But it would be if there was a emotional vampire aspect or a psychopathology element, personality disordered behaviors, or the emotional roller coaster of highs and crashing lows and dream invasions, like waking up with implant marks, waking up exhausted, having mutual abduction dreams, then you would suspect there's some kind of engineering going on. So I would say in my book, there was a lot of markers that you can tell if something like that was present. Although I don't like to put the blame necessarily on any one person. And this is something I think we discussed in the Love Bite Plus panel, as well as the hyperdimensional interference panel, where we talked about, you know, we can't go quick to blame it being one person's fault, because sometimes it's like a third party entity thing where maybe you're one of these high vibing spiritual people and you're searching the truth and you're waking up, and then you start dating, and then they keep messing with like every relationship you have, and they may mess with the partner, right? And then the partner thinks it's your fault, but in reality it may be because you're being targeted by some other technology or entities that basically wants to keep you from having a relationship because they want to keep you under control or torture you to stay in line or whatever. So it's not necessarily the fault of one person. You have to really look at the whole picture before we start blaming and doing what we can to take responsibility for what I call just the basic healthy relationship dynamics and what we can do to, you know, communicate compassionately and to learn how to express our love in the ways in which our partner can receive it so that we're on the same communication and mutual understanding. And as long as we can communicate with that partner some of our concerns and experiences and we can be open, that's what's important. Because more often than not, if you're somebody who's in the alt media or you're in research or you're doing even paranormal research, or you might have a family history or you know someone who does, you know, some of these things will happen. And it doesn't mean you have to stop that relationship, you know. You could stop something potentially good. So I would say just if you can be honest in your communications and your concerns and you can share information and do what would be a healthy relationship dynamic, then you're on your way to having a better relationship maybe than most people just by learning how to communicate. So I talk about that in my book, you know, the healthy communications that you can do even when you are, let's say, in my lab. And, you know, I had, you know, sample dialogue in there, what we can do if some of these things are happening so that we can be on a mutual respect with our partner to come to a common understanding. So,
and let's say that I had one of these parasitic relationships and it ended badly. It ended in tons of heartbreak. How would you recommend I go about recovering from a blow like this?
That could be hard. I think that one of the best ways to recover is to know that these things happen, because more often than not, the reason why many people suffered the way they did, like say the case histories in my book, or because it happened, was simply because they were unaware that this phenomena even happens. So just the awareness alone to know that this happens was enough to get them on a healing path that helped them from, let's say, stopping dating for a while or learning how to see it before it happens so that the next time they're not as likely to fall into a trap. So that's helpful. Or what I learned was learning about what we call the narcissistic abuse and recovery movement. And this is something that has become quite huge in the past 10 years, for example. And we are discovering people who have had cult abuse in particular, or they had a parent who was considered psychopathic or personality disordered. For example, a sociopathic personality, borderline, or narcissistic in particular can do a lot of harm to someone psychologically. And if you don't understand, quote, the nature of a psychopath or the nature of a narcissist or even the nature of an emotional vampire, and if we don't truly understand their nature and we've suffered from abuse, we may blame ourselves and not be able to heal as easily unless we really learned about the truth of psychopaths and the truth of narcissists and narcissistic abuse. So what helped me even in my life was learning that this is real and that it really wasn't all my fault, because I was taking a lot of blame to myself. And this what happens sometimes if you're raised by an alcoholic parent, for example. You take on a lot of shame and abuse and guilt and responsibility that's really not your responsibility. You take on stuff that's not yours, or you may blame yourself and feel like it's your fault, and you try to be perfect and you wonder why everything's falling apart. And then you come to realize later this wasn't even your fault, that you were abused. And these narcissists and psychopaths in particular, like the people I work with who've had the cult guru type of thing, or they had a sorcerer who was linked into them. These beings, these narcissists, sorcerers, they work by predation and by deception and by something that's working through them. So it's not your fault when these things happen, and try not to blame yourself, because these beings work by predation and deceit and manipulation. So even, quote, a normal person who didn't even have an abuse history, right, may be caught in the web of predation and trickery. So really it pays to learn about these things so that you can prepare yourself or not get so hurt and not be afraid next time for a relationship. And that's what I've learned, that the no contact rule, let's say in narcissistic abuse recovery, is to try not to obsess about how bad the other person was, or to get that other person to take accountability and to try to change them or try to understand you. You simply have to understand what they are and what's working through them, and the likelihood that those narcissists will not change or are very unlikely to change. Therefore, you have to do the no contact rule and keep your boundaries up and not even obsess about them, and then just work on your own healing. And from that point onward, you avoid people who display those characteristics, and you only work with people who are healthy and can communicate heart to heart and be honest and act in integrity. So a lot of this is about returning to integrity and trying to find others who have that kind of integrity. And the trouble in this world, we have normalized lack of integrity. We have normalized corruption in business, and a lot of corruption and perversions, even in certain kinds of sexual relationships. So that's the waking up process, is realizing there's a lot of normalization of corrupt behaviors and unethical business practices, and that even though others are normalizing these things, it doesn't mean that we have to do that to be accepted in society or to have this peer acceptance. So there may be, you know, a little bit of isolation in the beginning when you start to go through your awakening and recovery process to do what is with ethics and integrity in love and relationships, and you just be with those who respect you and can, you know, behave in those ways. And it may limit your partners, but it's certainly worth time to find those who are more of a higher caliber person than someone who's unaware and who's going to hurt you because they just are being used as organic portals, you know? And you know what I mean by the organic portal description?
Sure. In fact, there's been times when I can say that I've walked past a homeless person who wasn't messing with anybody else, didn't have a problem with anybody else, but as soon as I walked by them, they seemed to light up and get really angry and aggressive and almost target me and yell at me for no reason at all.
Yeah, that's it. That's like when it activates the demons. Like, some people can just cause those demons to come to the surface, and then the demons will actually have messages from higher demonic principalities and authorities. When this happens in the weird targeting things, I mean, it happened to a client of mine in my book. It was a female who worked for a social service agency, and you know, this got into a whole line of research about certain aware people who are, let's say, acting integrity. They're counselors. They want to help people who are homeless or, you know, abused women or developmentally disabled or mentally ill, and they may have jobs counseling people in these like group homes and safe houses and stuff like that. And then let's say the counselor is somebody who has a history where they've had some paranormal things in their past, and they may have a secret abduction history or something in their family line. And then they start getting targeted through a love bite. Or if there's someone, let's say a client who's like really messed up, and they're, let's say they never healed and they had schizophrenia, but they really have a demon. Sometimes, like, these mental illnesses are masks for demonic affliction. And so she would have these demonic beings that would just pop through one of the patients that was in one of these homes and give her specific messages that only a high-level demon would know, or somebody who was targeting her. So things like that can happen, you know, in these cases. So, yeah, strange things do happen to targeted individuals.
Another phenomena that I'm seeing quite a bit on various forums and internet communities, there's a lot of people that are stepping forward. It seems to be women, for the most part, that are claiming to actually have willing and consensual sexual relationships with reptilian beings. I haven't really seen it with any other aliens. Are these women or these people, are they making a big mistake and actually being deceived?
Well, I would say, yeah, because I have heard of this for many years, and a lot of them keep quiet about it. And, you know, there are some, I mean, even in certain, quote, spiritual practices and witchcraft where they can take on a familiar spirit, a demon. A lot of times it's a reptilian, and they can, you know, have regular sexual relations with them and give them a lot of pleasure at the same time in exchange for power or life force. But the reptilians in particular, they are the kings of sexual pleasure and abuse at the same time. So they know how to arouse and sexually, you know, they can cause great sexual arousal in their whoever they're working with. So there are women who can do that and do that. Sometimes they don't even know they're doing that. They may think they're having like a lucid dream or, you know, an astral thing. And it's like they think they're having dreams of like this wonderful, you know, this movie star or whatever. And then really it's a shape-shifting reptilian who's, you know, causing them to have, you know, great orgasms over and over again. And they can do that. So sometimes they do make agreements and they don't think there's anything wrong with it. And the reptilian in exchange will sometimes, you know, protect them or give them certain powers. So that does happen, I have to say, and it's actually quite common. And yeah,
is it?
I mean, not real common, but I'd say it can be dangerous because there's a danger there of being controlled and manipulated. Like they can lure you into having, let's say, a sacred marriage with one of these beings. Let's say it's a sorcerer, and then the sorcerer is actually connected or hosted by a high-level demonic being or a Draco or a reptilian or could be a very high-level demon. And then as part of this sacred marriage that they do on these other levels and rituals, they may give them, you know, a lot of sexual pleasure and arousal, but it links them in with the entity that's running that being, or it could be the entity alone without a human host. And then once they make a pact and an agreement, you are bound by that and you are under their control until you become free or you want to become free. So you have to be very careful because once they make that agreement, they pull you into their game of spiritual control and they can control you and, you know, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, or it could be your spiritual death, literally. So you have to be very, very careful with those kinds of pacts and those kinds of agreements.
What do you
think? Dangerous. Yeah.
What do you think of this idea that the British royal family are actually hybrid reptilian aliens?
Well, I would say, you know, trace power, trace money, trace spiritual frequency. Oftentimes you do see non-humans at the top who are playing human, and they tend to be very, very wealthy. And I'm not saying every single one of them in a royalty family is one of these, but clairvoyants do perceive these things. And, you know, by their behavior, you shall know them. By their spiritual signature, you shall know them. So, you know, you have to perceive clearly. And a lot of them do have great amount of wealth and power, and that's how they got their power to begin with, is because these entities are running the show and they're running specific bloodlines and families and wealth. So,
is it true that many UFO researchers are being killed, such as William Cooper?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what can I say? I mean, we're targeted as it is. So that's just the name of the game. And that's why sometimes many of them don't last very long, or they change their tune, or they may have their 15 minutes or 2 years, 5 years, whatever, of fame, and then they kind of fade out because they got targeted so bad. And many of them have come to me because they may have stumbled across a dark truth. And I can't say who, because I have to keep everything confidential. But they may come across some dark truths, and from that point forward, they became targeted in different ways, or their spouses became targeted where the spouse, for example, got into a love bite, which was engineered with another person, and their marriage failed, and, you know, like it destroyed their life emotionally. so they couldn't do the research anymore, or they were just devastated. So these things do happen depending on what they find out and what's considered dangerous information. But more often than not, they may get steered into a different direction of research so that, you know, they're subtly interdimensionally handled or manipulated to only go in certain areas and avoid others. And they may or may not know that they're being handled. So that's why it pays to be aware. And sometimes there's many things that researchers just do not say publicly, and they may not want to harm themselves or their families or their loved ones by saying something that they feel is not worth compromising their safety. So the more you learn on that, what I'm finding, I mean, I'm corresponding with people from France, for example, and they say pretty much 90% of the research out there is connected with some kind of corruption or false light or spin control, and that the ones who really, really know and who have discovered a lot, you know, they stay kind of huddled and isolated in their corners in different places in the world, and they're pretty isolated from one another, and they really miss having relationships and contacts with like-minded people who have discovered the same thing, but their safety has been so compromised that they have to live these quiet, isolated lives. So that happens. And I'm not saying every single researcher is compromised. It's just that at some point, many of them have been, you know, targeted or threatened or, you know, hurt in some way so that they kind of backed off from one line and maybe went somewhere else with it. So,
and since we have talked a little bit about shadow governments and things like that, control systems, what do you think of the idea that certain global events like 9/11 or Sandy Hook might be some sort of way to manipulate society? Do you believe there's any truth to that?
Yes. It would be easy to manipulate people through events such as that, like large-scale shock and trauma. Because when we consider the individual aspect of trauma-based mind control and spiritual control, then all they have to do is step it up a notch in the macro scale in whatever way they'd like to engineer to get a certain number of the population to be affected so that they can manipulate them to pass laws that cause them to have less and less freedom. And, you know, the surveillance, for example, and the technologies of the lack of privacy is a reaction to some of these events that could be trumped up. But in fact, there's other reasons why I believe that there's so much surveillance to the point of great detail that is really unnecessary. And it's shocking now, even when you want to apply for a job, how much information they want to have in terms of your history. I mean, you think you're applying for a job for the frigging secret government or the CIA when you apply for some of these jobs. It's completely unnecessary to have that much information and surveillance, even in our, you know, Google or the Gmail and all these things. You have to give all this information. It's ridiculous. It's just totally ridiculous. But there was something that was brought about on a radio show, and which I agree with, and it was a Randy Moggins show on Off Planet Radio with the man called a Hebrew scholar, Dr. Shmuel Asher. And one of the things that he brought up, and I wrote a post about this on my website about dream abductions, and because one of the conversations they had was this guy had a dream abduction numerous times where your consciousness is literally pulled into another reality, and he happened to be lucid in this dream, but it's like it's not a dream, but it's a dream, and you get pulled into these alternate realities that seem like they are synthetic, matrix-created realities that they can pull your consciousness into, where they literally pull you out astrally, or they can suck your consciousness out of your body and then pop it into this fake reality. And so one of the things that he brought up about the detail in these surveillance technologies, it's not just because they're you know, wanting to get information on us because they think we're a terrorist or whatever it is. It's because they want detailed information so they can reconstruct realities on other dimensional scales, like a fake holographic matrix where they can literally pull your consciousness out of your body and then put you in these fake realities. And this is something that many alien abductees and MILABs in particular have been experiencing for years. We called it the virtual reality scenario, and Dr. Carla Turner talked about that. And there's technologies that can literally cause you to think you're in another reality that seems totally real, or actually take your consciousness out and then plop you into another reality. And it's like a fully functional reality, but it's like a construct. So I think there's advanced technologies, including artificial intelligence, that can reconstruct these realities. And then that's one reason why they need so much information, because they're copying reality and creating fake synthetic overlays to take our consciousness there. And that's what I think is happening on all these other secret levels. And it kind of goes into, you know, a lot more conspiracy on this hyperdimensional level. But I really do think something like that is happening. And that might be one reason why there's so much surveillance and detail in the information they're wanting from other people's lives. So they can literally upload your consciousness and plop you in this other fake reality. And it's a way to control our life force and our souls.
Are there any good aliens or forces helping us out at all?
I think so. I think there are good ones, and you know, that's a question that each person kind of has to ask themselves. I always err on the side of caution, though, when it comes to any kind of religious thing or spirit guide, but I think there really are good beings. And you know, just like there's our own loved ones who've passed over, who can help us from the other side. And I've had that happen. And I think as long as we keep our consciousness pure and our intentions pure to, you know, be perceptive and willing to see something that we may not want to believe, we just have to kind of drop our illusions so that we can perceive clearly. And then when we are in that state of humility and openness, but very focused integrity, then we're able to perceive, you know, who's good, who's not, who has what intention behind their consciousness. And then we're going to start to be able to perceive things just like animals, for example. Like animals innately can know if somebody has a bad vibe, and they'll like bark at you, and whereas they'll just jump up and lick and hug somebody else. And I think, you know, plants and animals, they have an innate knowingness of who has good intentions and who doesn't, or who has demons. Like if somebody has a lot of demons, you know, animals will react weird around you. You ever noticed? Like, yeah, I mean, I used to have clients who their cat was so sensitive that when they went out with this guy who was like a love bite, and he was hosted by some reptilian, that the cat would get violently ill and barf all over the house, because cats are like reptilian busters. They know when there's like a reptilian in the room, and they can be actually good guides or protectors at night from abductions. Even they can know before they come, and they'll wake you up before like the aliens come sometimes. So, you know, depends on your perception on what is in your presence. So I would say even animals are very good at that.
Yeah, that's funny, because I just recently had an experience where I swear there was some kind of poltergeist or something in my kitchen, and my cat seemed to look at it as if it noticed it or could actually see it.
Yeah. Cats are very spiritual that way, and then maybe that's why in the ancient, I don't know if it was the ancient Egyptians had a cat goddess or whatever, but cats are very perceptive, and they can enter your dreams. A lot of times, you know, the witch would have a cat familiar. And there's some people that I know who they actually have certain animals in their lives that were sent on them, or it came across them in a very synchronistic, auspicious fashion. And then that animal basically is acting as a spirit, as a kind of protector, and can help heal them. And help them be aware if like there's something in their home, they know, and they'll bark and they'll protect them. So animals can be very unique creatures that are, you know, heaven sent sometimes. So you just never know.
Could we be in a period of awakening? Are we in a revelation scenario or some type of end of days?
I think so. Although I don't want to hold fast to a particular scripture or prophecy, although there is a lot to be said for some prophecies, but they can also be corrupted and manipulated. And many scriptures have been, even the Bible, the canonical Bible. And so that's why it's good to, you know, study everything, and including people who have genuine connection with the spiritual realm. Sometimes they have their own precognitive things that they're shown about things that may occur in their lives or people that they love. So the thing about, let's say, the book of Revelation, I'm not saying it's not true. I think there's a lot that may be absolutely true in it, but there's certain narratives that are what I call mind control things, memes or corruptions, that these entities who are working humanity like a farm, well, they want us to believe it so that we create the reality that's part of their agenda and how they're planning things. Or they're planning a reset, for example. Or they're planning a cataclysm and a reset of humanity so that they can, you know, do the cataclysm, wipe it clean, dummy everybody down again, and start it all over again, because they have to, they always have to reset and create a cataclysm when people get too awake to know who they are and what they're doing. So that's always a cue that, okay, it's, you know, time to do a reset and, you know, create a cataclysm, create another war, whatever it is, to kill a bunch of people so that they'll forget, or they'll get so caught up in war that they can't focus on their spiritual path. So that, I think that's happened over and over again, and they can create narratives that we believe, and through our belief, we create that reality. So that's why I hold things lightly, even, you know, scriptures, even though there's a lot of truth, hold it lightly and always redirect and recalibrate with your internal authentic connection to spirit and eternal life, because that is who and what we are. We are the essence. So looking outside of ourselves could be doing us damage in many cases. So we just have to be mindful of that. I'm not saying it's all false, but to always redirect towards an internal self-referential deep knowing is a good way to lead our lives so that we don't get thrown off track through someone else's narrative.
Now, does that make sense? Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Eve, do you have any desire at all to meet aliens?
I've already met them. I don't need to do that. I've already met different beings in my own experiences and have a sense for who they are. And so I don't need to do that. I mean, sometimes I think about, you know, Jesus, the original Yahushua, whatever his name is, and some of these beings in history. But I feel like that I already know him and that. And that's been revealed to me so that it's not an issue for me, although I miss, like, quote, being with my own kind, where, you know, I want to be with others who have that, like, I don't know, purity of spirit and the same desire for truth and living it of that level. And sometimes I miss that because I feel isolated, just like there's many others in the world who do their own research and they feel isolated in their own lives. So I know that there's a lot of people out there and that we are not alone. We feel alone, but we are not alone. There's so many more who are like us who desire to connect, but for one reason or another, we feel isolated in these small towns out in the middle of nowhere because we can't afford to live in the Matrix world in a fake job where you have to be a slave or whatever it is. I think there's more people who are awake than we know, and that, you know, the media always wants to present something, but in reality, it could be different, you know?
Do you feel that there could be some sort of disclosure or even a false deception type of disclosure in the future?
Oh, yeah. They're playing all kinds of cards now, you know? You know, pick a card, any card at all. Which one will work here? What do they want? And it's more likely to be spin controlled if they can, and to carry out a certain response, you know, the problem, reaction, solution. It doesn't mean these things aren't happening on some level, but, you know, whenever something happens in the large-scale political way, it's more likely to be spin-controlled, to have some kind of falseness within a truth to carry out, you know, desired behaviors and outcome. So, you know, just keep that in mind. And, you know, as long as you do your own research and you have that intuition about, I find that it paid off for me to personally interview and counsel people one-on-one or in groups, and then find out for myself what people were really experiencing in their personal lives versus what's being in the published literature or in historical documents, for example. You always find out more through your own personal experience and personal investigations. So that's why it's good to do your own research and don't just follow what someone else says just because it has a stamp of authority on it. That always do your own research.
Awesome. And unfortunately, we are approaching the end of the interview. I want to first of all thank you for your time, and also go ahead and open up the floor if you would like to get on the soapbox one more time or say any last words to my listeners out there. And you can also follow that up with any plugs that you might have, websites, upcoming talks, anything at all that you would like to plug. Please go ahead and do that now.
Yeah, well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I have a website called evelorigan.com, and then I do blog posts and updates on different radio shows and things. I have two books. The first one's called The Love Bite. That's the one about how ETs have engineered relationships called the Alien Love Bite. And so that one's more about the alien abduction and the MyLab phenomena with real case histories. And that's a really good book for if you want more details, if you think that's happening in your life. The second book's called The Dark Side of Cupid, Love Affairs, the Supernatural, and Energy Vampirism. And it's really an extension of research over the years about the love bite and more dynamics of how this is happening and how to recognize it, what to do if it's happening to you, and the hyperdimensional aspects of how all this takes place. And those are available through Amazon and I think Barnes & Noble. And it's Kindle and also hard copy. So you can get that mostly through Amazon, the books, and I would highly recommend them because they're great information on different case histories and the different things that happen. And I'll probably have some more radio shows coming up with Project Camelot TV with Mark Gray. And I did one earlier, but there was so much interference, and it was like entire statements I made like for 6 minutes that was just completely deleted. And a lot of it, I think, was important information. So I'm going to do another one with my colleague, Laura Leon, who I've done some work with. We used to do a group together where we work with clients who've had anomalous trauma. And so she has her own perspective and her own experiences and work that might be, you know, a valuable thing to hear for that upcoming interview and some work we're doing together. I'm writing another book, so I'm really busy, actually. So, yeah, I think that's enough for now, both those books and some upcoming radio shows. And I'm just continuing on with what I feel is the most important thing, which is really the therapeutic aspect of trauma resolution and integration and really tapping into our spiritual power, because that's where it's at, I think. Our spiritual power is definitely where it's at.
Well, Eve, it was definitely great having this opportunity to get to know you a little bit, and I'd definitely like to do this again in the future someday.
More than happy to do that, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to be on your show. So thank you.
All right, and until then, you have a good day, my friend.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. And there you have it. That was Eve Lorigan. What a fascinating interview that was. I don't even know what to say. But the first thing I need to do is take a little break and do my thing. Go use the little girl's room and eat some of these Doritos that I have lying around. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. And in the meantime, I'm going to play a little music. Let's go ahead and play some more Kitten Head. And I'll actually play some different songs of theirs today. So stay tuned for some Kitten Head. We'll be right back.
Yet, ow! But what? Baby, It's done.
Right.
And welcome back to End of Days Radio. This is your host, Daniel. I'm still broadcasting from those broken ruins. Still bringing it to you. How are you guys? Yes, this is the second segment, the wrap-up period for End of Days Radio. This is the wrap-up segment. This is when we open up the lines, read some fan mail, and talk about news going on in the world. It used to be paranormal news, but now it's just going to be news. Because what I found is that if you search for paranormal news daily, oftentimes it's stupid stuff like things going on in haunted houses and movies that are coming out and things like that. It's really hard to find good, relevant paranormal news on a bi-weekly or weekly basis. Too much of it is just stupid. So I'm opening it up, and I'm just going to talk about anything, any current events that are interesting. I'm going to try to focus more on the paranormal conspiracy world, but if something's interesting and it's not part of that world, then we'll talk about it anyway, because everything's related anyways, right? I did want to share a comment that was left to me on YouTube, on my show with Thomas Hatzis. That was End of Days Radio episode 26. After the interview, I was doing my usual thing after the break, and I was making some comments, kind of joking sort of comments, and I mentioned that I said some bad things about feminists, not specifically feminists, but the ones that have hairy armpits and legs, and I thought that I was being funny, or thought that I was at least trying to be funny, but then I get this comment on YouTube on that show. Somebody left me a comment. It says, "What you got against chicks with hairy legs and armpits? No offense, but you seem like a moron." And I replied, I was just trying to, you know, joke around and be friendly. I responded, "I never said I wasn't a moron. By the way, go shave your legs, hippie." So here I think I'm being hilarious, because I'm taking the situation and trying to turn it into a positive and be funny. But it didn't work. This person got even angrier. She says, I'm assuming it's a she, says, "I'm not a hippie chick," in quotes, "but it's nice to know where people in the ahem," she actually wrote out ahem, "truth community," in parentheses, in quotes, laugh out loud, "stand on such elementary social questions, i.e. you're reactionary as fuck. Space. I'm not trolling you. Actually listen to this whole thing, but you don't do yourself any favors with such backwards ideologies showing through. Are you still in high school? Question mark. Critical thinking skills could use some work. I know I sound like a cunt, but I mean it." Wow, can you believe that? So friendly and jovial on this beautiful day. Why so angry, first of all? Why so angry? Because I jokingly said something negative about hippie chicks with hairy armpits. I mean, so what? I'm just trying to be entertaining. I'm trying to keep the show moving. I'm trying to say things that are controversial, hopefully not too controversial, but you're really going to let that offend you? I can imagine that you probably have some pretty hairy armpits or some pretty hairy legs for that to offend you. But I'm sorry if I offended you. I guess I'm apologizing. I did not mean to target any specific group or individual or anything like that. I didn't mean to hurt anybody's feelings. I was really just trying to be funny. I got a lot of air to fill. I don't want to come on here and just do interviews and bore the crap out of everybody. So I want to actually have some sort of opinions. But maybe I shouldn't talk about this or that group. Maybe I shouldn't talk about the liberals or the feminists and people like that, because I seem to be offending people. I don't want to offend people. I do want to be honest. I do want to carry a conversation and have something to say, but I don't really want to constantly offend people. I'm not really going for that. I'm not a shock jock. I'm not looking for negative attention. If you don't shave your pits, then don't. I don't see why you have to. I mean,
Does it look better when you're wearing a tank top? Yes. Does it smell a little better when you take care of those areas? Yes. Do I get a little bit scared when I see a woman with super hairy legs? Yes. But that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with it. It just means that you like to go all natural. You prefer that Sasquatch style of look, and that's fine. Oh, I'm doing it again. I better stop. There's nothing wrong with being a hippie. I mean, come on. This show is all about counterculture and resisting the system. So I'm all for the hippies. I'm not against the hippies. I'm for them. And I'm not against people that protest either. I'm for them too, because they're standing up for a cause that they believe in. So there's nothing wrong with being a hippie. There's nothing wrong with protesting or getting naked and sliding in the mud at Woodstock. There's nothing wrong with that. And no, I don't believe that the entire hippie movement is a psyops or COINTELPRO or anything like that. It might have been co-opted. It might have been used for those purposes, but I don't believe that that's all that it was. Those were just the times. And if you're a woman who has those hairy legs or hairy armpits, then just be yourself and be proud to be who you are and flaunt those hairy pits all over the place and rub them in the faces of men that you deem attractive to you. And he will buy you chocolates and you will rub your hairy armpits in his face. Such a wonderful romance going on here on End of Days Radio. Okay, let's move on. And once again, I apologize if I offended anybody out there. I'm going to try to behave a little bit more and not turn off large portions of my audience by insulting them. As fun as it can be sometimes, it's just not good for me. It's not good for the show. So I apologize to all of you out there. I apologize to all of you feminists. I apologize to all of you hippies out there with flowers in your hair. Okay, what else do we have going on? There's a big story in the news, and I can't help but want to talk about this. It's the whole Otto Warm Beer thing. Otto Warm Beer. I've talked about this kid a lot on this show. Ever since he originally was detained by the Korean officials. So this is the kid that supposedly he went over and he stole a poster off of a wall of a hotel so he could impress some rich snob fraternity so that he could get in their fraternity and get a head start in life. So he would be accepted into the world of big business and blah, blah, blah. So I've talked about this kid on the show a lot. I've talked about how horrible that I think the whole situation is and how dumb he is for ripping a poster off of a hotel room so that he can become a part of this fraternity, which was supposedly linked to secret societies and all of that. Well, it turns out that all of the people that went over to Korea with him, all of the other kids and the teacher or the guide or whoever he was, they all said that he didn't even do it. He did not pull a poster off of a hotel room wall. And the video that there is, I admit, I never actually watched it. I just assumed it was legit. I just read, oh, there's video, and I assumed that there was video. But it turns out that the video is grainy. You can't even see who's doing it. It's probably just another North Korean guy in a mask doing it. It was a setup. They just wanted to go and grab this kid so they could torture him, question him, beat the crap out of him. I mean, they only needed one from the group. So they grabbed this kid, they tortured him and beat him, they turned his brains to jelly, and he just died, by the way. So everybody that's already pissed off about this situation is probably 10 times as pissed that these North Koreans, these commies, think that they can take one of our citizens, torture him to death, and just send him back home like that. So my question is, what type of retaliation is going to result from this? Are we going to do anything? Are we going to enforce trade restrictions on them? Or have we already done that to a degree where we can't do anymore? Is that the situation? Can we do anything to these guys? Can we make them hurt like they did to this American citizen? I don't think we should let that slide. what kind of message does that send to the rest of the world? This is what we allow to happen to our citizens. We're going to let some tiny little country with hardly any people or weapons, we're going to let them push us around? I think that's wrong on every level. I mean, I'm not for the American Empire, obviously, or anything like that, but is there a time for aggression? Yeah, of course. I cannot believe that anybody would let this slide. I mean, obviously, that kid was, he was killed on orders from higher up. This didn't happen in a prison, and that's what they're all saying. That's what everybody thinks. And I apologize for misjudging the situation. I'm completely disgusted. First of all, nobody should ever go to North Korea. Why the hell would anybody go there for a stopover, to visit, whatever? I wouldn't even go to South Korea. And I heard South Korea is pretty nice. I have heard that they actually eat dogs there, which is fine. That's their culture. There's nothing... Well, I wouldn't eat dogs, but I wouldn't even go there. Not because they eat dogs, but because I would not want to go anywhere near North Korea. I also am not a really huge fan of kimchi. It's okay sometimes when it's cooked right. Korean barbecue is good. I remember that I used to get these noodles. They're kind of like top ramen, but they come in a bowl. Let's see, what could I compare them to? They're kind of like cup noodles, but these were a spicy Korean version. They were called shin noodles. I'm sure some of you guys out there know about this, but oh my god, I got addicted to these, and I bought a whole box of them from Costco. And these things must have had some wild chemicals and spices in them, because I swear I almost died one day from these shin noodles. I ate them like 5 days in a row, and on the fifth day, I seriously felt like I was going to die. And I never bought them again, I never ate them again, but damn, those things were potent. They were spicy, they were full of all kinds of strange chemicals. And I just was not the same after eating those. So beware of those shin noodles. What were we talking about again? Oh yeah, Otto Warmbier. Warmbier. This is a statement from President Trump. He says, "There is nothing more tragic for a parent than to lose a child in the prime of life," President Trump said in a statement. "Our thoughts and prayers are with Otto's family and friends and all who loved him. Otto's fate deepens my administration's determination to prevent such tragedies from befalling innocent people at the hands of regimes that do not respect the rule of law or basic human decency. The United States once again condemns the brutality of the North Korean regime as we mourn its latest victim." So that comes from President Trump, our president and leader. He is saying that this country condemns that brutality. So at least he's saying something about it. He's condemning it. But I really wish that we would just go in there with a bunch of Marines and just take that little fat bastard, that little human bowling ball, little piggy with his awful little bull haircut. I wish that we would just go in there and kick the crap out of him and bring him over here. Why don't we bring him over here? And then we'll put him in a cage full of spiders or whatever he fears the most. We'll do that. We'll torture him and we'll find out what his worst fear is. And then we'll put him in a cage with his worst fear. And it will be revenge for all the people that he tortured and he made suffer. It would really be nice if there was some kind of justice like that in this world, wouldn't it? Okay. Also, for those of you that are fans of the show Bachelor in Paradise, I did talk about this on one of my previous episodes. It turns out that Bachelor in Paradise is back on, so that whole rape, inappropriate scandal is being pushed to the side, and they are bringing back the show. And I'm, despite what happened, I am happy because I do enjoy that show, and I'm glad it's going to be back on air. I actually have something to look forward to this summer besides talking about aliens and stuff like that. Although I do love talking about aliens, especially reptilians. Yeah, my favorite. If you want to write me, remember that's DanielEndOfDaysRadio@gmail.com. I do have a letter. This one, I think I'm going to read this right now because this one actually is about reptilians. It says, this is from Jonathan Lewis. Jonathan Lewis, or Jonathan, I shouldn't say his last name. It says, hi, Daniel. So you believe in reptilians. Doesn't it bother you that there is no footage of even one reptilian being, if supposedly there are so many of these creatures? Good question. Good question. Thank you again for not being rude, disrespectful, making fun of me, etc., etc. But if you do want to do that, that is okay. I'll still read your letter, as I have been doing. And I do completely agree. It's hard to prove something's existence when you don't have a photograph, when you have not seen one yourself, etc., etc. I feel like there's been enough people out there that are reliable, that are honest, that have been honest about the stories, the situations that they've been through. I feel like there's enough there. I also feel like there's a lot of evidence coming from shamanism and also from the ancient world. And that's why I believe in them. Do I know absolutely for sure? Well, no, of course not. I haven't seen one with my own eyes. I'm 99% sure. Like, there's always that 1% that wonders, is this some sort of trick, deception, disinformation? Could there be another alien group behind the reptilians? Could it be some sort of demonic trick? Yeah, of course. I've had those thoughts, and I've shared them on the show plenty of times. Ultimately, I just don't know. But I think that in the UFO research community, there's enough out there that to show that there are these things that, you know, like the work of Eve Lorgan, she's spent a lifetime researching this stuff, as have her compatriots, such as James Bartley or her mentor, Barbara Bartholik. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. They've devoted their lifetimes to researching this stuff, as have people like David Icke. And there's plenty of others out there. I don't mean to leave anybody out, because there's a lot of good reptilian alien researchers out there. Even people like Linda Moulton Howe, who gets accused of being a disinformation agent or something like that. She has looked into stuff. She really has. And there's plenty of other people out there. I don't know which ones are vectors of disinformation and which ones aren't. I can't really make that judgment. Somebody asked me the other day, I did a little sit down with one of my past guests, Richard Bruce, and he was asking me what I thought of the whole Corey Good blue avian thing. And I just told him, to me, I was honest. I just said, to me, that it does reek of some sort of disinformation. I mean, the idea that he's talking to these blue aliens that look like birds, it sounds a little far-fetched. Why doesn't he have a picture? Why doesn't he introduce them to us, et cetera, et cetera? The question rises, is he being deceived? But I don't want to talk about people like that, because ultimately I don't know. I can't say that my crazy stuff that I believe in and talk about is better than that person's crazy stuff. You know what I mean? I can't go around and make those judgments about people, especially when I'm doing a show like this and I'm going around telling people that this stuff is real. I'm not going to pick and choose and say, oh, I'm an authority on this subject and you're a liar, you're a liar, you're telling the truth. No, Corey is welcome to come on the show. I've invited him on here before. He has not taken me up on the offer. And I can only assume that these blue avian aliens are telling him not to come on the show. Or maybe the show's just not big enough for him. I'd like to think that the aliens are telling him not to, because they know I'll expose them. No, I'm just kidding. But it is funny, though, because it does seem like there are people that are kind of avoiding the show, and I do think it does have something to do with the fact that I do ask the hard questions. I do present things in a way where it's really hard to sit here and lie to me. It's true. I mean, I really dig in my interviews. So if anybody is apprehensive about coming on here, then I can see why. I can. But we do have a lot of stuff ahead, so don't worry about there not being amazing guests coming on here, because there are already tons of amazing guests booked, as there has already been tons of amazing guests that have come on already. It's not even like it comes down to how big a person is, how many followers they have, how many fans. It really doesn't come down to that. It just comes down to, do they want to sit down for an interview? Do they want to be interviewed? Some of the biggest people out there are just like, yeah, I'll sit down for your podcast. Some of the biggest stars, the biggest people out there, they have no problem with it. Isn't that funny? I didn't tell you that, but for those of you that are thinking about getting into this, they're thinking about getting into podcasting, like I said, I'll help you out. I'll help you get started. I don't care. This isn't a competition. The more people doing this, the better. I'll straight up tell you that a lot of people that you ask that you don't think would deal with you, if you're willing to put the work in and you're willing to sit down with them, they might be willing to sit down with you. So keep that in mind. Don't think that everybody is stuck up or everybody thinks they're better than you or that you're not good enough. Don't ever think that. In fact, don't ever let anybody, I was going to talk about this. Don't let anybody, don't ever bow down to anybody, ever. There's no reason why you should ever bow down to anybody. You think that you have to. You think like, oh, I need to go with the flow. I need to take part in the rules of society. I need to, you know, this person's my boss. They're my father. They're a priest. They're this or they're that. They're a police officer. No, no, no. You never need to bow down to anybody. Don't let anybody push you around. Don't let anybody dominate you. Don't let them push you around. Don't let them tell you what to do. And if they do try to do that to you, fight back. Tell them to fuck off. Because you do not have to take part of any domineering, archonic control schemes. You are a free citizen. You are independent. It's a free country. If you don't live in America, then it's a free world. Whether or not your government believes that or not, you're a god. You are a god. Why does a god have to take orders from anybody? Why does a god need to let anybody dominate them or tell them what's right and wrong or tell them what they can and can't do with themselves? Don't let anybody tell you what to do. Don't let anybody push you around. Don't let anybody bully you. Don't let anybody control you ever. That's what this show is all about. It really is. It's about being a rebel, about not taking crap from anybody, including government forces, including spiritual forces out there. It's about not taking their crap. So a lot of people have been demanding that I do a video form of the show. I've talked about this quite a bit, but I don't really feel that it's right for this particular format. It's just so much easier to do audio and not have to worry about my guests not wanting to be on camera or me not wanting to be on camera. Sometimes I might pick my nose while I'm broadcasting. Or even do worse things, which I'm not going to mention. But I'm not sure if I'm the right person that should be on camera. I might just space out and notice a shadow spider on the ceiling or something like that and not be paying as much attention as I should be. And the viewers might see my eyes wander off and think that I'm not really into the conversation. But actually, there's some sort of astral spider on my ceiling. That type of thing could happen. A lot of things could happen. I don't feel like it's necessary. I want you to be able to listen to. I said this before. I want you to be able to listen while you're in your car, driving to work, while you're waiting for the bus, while you're working. You should be able to listen to this show. You should be able to multitask and listen to this show while you're doing other things. But I do have some video content planned. I would hate to completely ignore that whole side of things. I do have some interesting idea for videos. Or if I want to just get on and talk, like I want to rant about something, rather than release a full podcast, maybe I'll just make a video, or I might go on location and take a camera with me. I think that would be better. Like I might go and explore or research something and actually take a camera, or just ask people on the street what they think about weird topics. That could be pretty funny. If you have any ideas for the show, if you'd like to appear as a guest, if you'd like to comment on anything, remember, that's DanielEndOfDaysRadio@gmail.com. I don't really feel like doing a super long, drawn-out show today. It's morning. It's in the middle of the week, so a lot of people are working. I don't think there's going to be a lot of callers. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up. And I do have other stuff to talk about, but I'm going to save it for next time. So if you're on the live stream and expecting a super live if you're expecting a super long show, I do apologize. But don't worry, because I will be back in just a few days. I'm going to be back on Sunday, so today's Thursday, so just a few more days, and I will most likely be doing a longer show. I won't be on air Saturday, So those of you that listen to End of Days Radio on Saturdays regularly, I apologize to you. But we do have V from the Red Pill Hardcore podcast on June 25th at 2 p.m. We also have Mark Sargent coming on to talk about Flat Earth. That's June 27th at 5 p.m. PST. Marshall Masters the very next day on June 28th at 5 p.m. PST. In July, we're looking at Wolfman Mike from the Monster Castle Paranormal podcast on July 1st at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That will be on a Saturday, so we'll be kind of getting back into our normal schedule. And then we'll actually be talking to the lead singer, Kiwi, from the band Kittenhead, who I've been promoting the past couple shows. So we're actually going to be having her on. And we're going to, this is exciting because it's kind of the first purely musical guest that we've had on here. So we're going to mix things up a little bit. And hopefully that'll be a really interesting experience doing a different type of show. And I'm kind of expanding things and branching out, experimenting. Of course, the show and the nature of it and the content is going to remain the same. But I think it's cool to mix it up every once in a while and talk to a musical guest. And then we'll be getting back to the world of paranormal and conspiracy on July 7th at 8:30 Pacific Standard Time. Graham and Darren from Grimerica will be joining me here on End of Days Radio. So we are putting our heads together with other paranormal podcasters coming at the end of this month and at the beginning of next month. And next month is going to be kind of a themed month where we're talking to a lot of other shows and a lot of other show hosts. So I'm going to keep the theme thing kind of going. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Apple podcast services, as well as Google podcasting services, Google Play Store. You can get the Stitcher app, and that works on both Apple and Android. You can listen to the show that way. We're also on the TuneIn Radio app. Just search EODR. There's a fake End of Days Radio on there. Make sure you grab the right one. For now, it's just labeled EODR. And if you want to talk to me on Skype, NinjaShoes777 on Skype. The call number is 209-348-9810. Also, like the show on Facebook, facebook.com/TheRealEndOfDaysRadio, or you can just go to endofdaysradio.com and click like there. Follow me on Twitter, that's at NinjaShoes. If you want to donate to the show, really appreciate those donations. They help keep the lights on, help keep the servers running. So if you want to donate, just go to endofdaysradio.com and click on that PayPal donate link and subscribe on YouTube as well. What else is there? Join me here for our live show. If you want to see the schedule, just go to endofdaysradio.com. It'll be on the left hand of the screen. Or if you're looking on a mobile device, scroll all the way to the bottom to see the schedule. And then you can time your schedule around the live shows. And hopefully join me here. Go to endofdaysradio.com and click chat room to join me for the live shows. So we're bringing back the live shows in a big way. We're going to focus a little bit more on that. And other than that, just thank you, everybody, for being here. I will see you Sunday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And until then, we are the Resistance.
Winter's coming.
The king has returned from the broken ruins of Babylon. This is me.